The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Portions of today's program are brought to you by Bucky's foolproof horse racing method. Yes, Bucky's back after serving 20 hard ones at the state pen, baby, and this time his method of picking winners at the track is guaranteed. You just send old Bucky $50, he's going to send you 10 big winners at any kind of track of your choice. Guaranteed, yes indeed, because the horses he's picked have already won in past races. So hey, if you want the names of guaranteed winners, send for Bucky's foolproof horse racing method.
Cellular.
This is me, Frank Atolo.
It is no longer in service. If you feel you have reached this recording in error, please check the number and dial again.
See, he's got his fingers into all those things. He knows.
Message S.
This is me, Frank Atolo.
Huh?
This is me, Frank Atolo. How you doing this evening? You got this bottle of fluids. Ready? No sexual affairs. I keep telling you. This is me, Frank Atolo. Got hit in the nuts with a bill. Fuck you.
Cats, it's indeed a pleasure to gash away your Casparastis by wrapping my choppers around the following syllables. From many sets of 52 sevens, these next mellow jacks have been tenderly the tibbers of righteous studs and hens on this side of the big wet. They're America's top comedy team. Have caused our midriff to do an abundance of heaving and hoeing. Meet the cat with the handle of George and the kitten with the bracelet upon his piece, Burns and Allen.
Well, Gracie, here we are on Jubilee.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful? You know, George, that announcer speaks better French than Charles Boyer.
Gracie, that's not French. It's jive. That's the way they talk in jive.
Jive?
Hmm.
Is that an island in the Pacific?
No, dear, that's a fad. It's the language of the Hepcats.
Oh, what island are they on?
Look, Gracie, they're all over. If you're hep, it means you're hip.
Oh, hep means hip.
That's right.
Well, I'd feel awfully silly saying that Paul Whiteman has big hips.
Paul Whiteman hasn't got big hips.
Have you seen him lately?
Look, I'm getting tired of this. Let's drop Whiteman.
No, George, you hold up your end and I'll hold mine.
I think I've got the heavy end.
Well, a little exercise will take that off.
Thanks. Gracie, I'm afraid you'll never be as mellow as a cello or sharp as a harp. In other words, you're not a square from Delaware.
Well, of course not. I'm a bounce from Jersey.
A bounce from Jersey?
Yeah.
You're not from Jersey. You're from New York City.
Well, that's just a bounce from Jersey.
Gracie, try to understand this. If you're hep to the jive and you meet a friend on the street, you don't say hello.
No?
No. You say, give me some skin jack. Lock it, sock it, and put it in your pocket.
Put what in your pocket?
Nothing. You just say it.
But why?
Well, why do you say hello to people?
Because I like them.
Well, certainly.
Well, if I like them, I'm not going to lock them and sock them and put them in my pocket. I haven't even got a pocket.
I'm afraid you just haven't got your boots laced.
Have you?
Sure, I have.
Oh, that's silly. How can you lace button shoes?
Look, dear, we're invited to Jubilee because there were a lot of requests for you to say hello to the cats overseas. Go ahead and jive it up.
Oh, okay. Mares eat oats and does eat oats, but little cats eat liver.
Gracie, that's wrong.
Don't be ridiculous, George. Show me a cat that doesn't like liver.
All right, cats like liver. Well, but that has nothing to do with you saying hello to the boys. I've explained jive to you. Now, go ahead. Do the best you can.
Well, dear cat, this is Gracie with the George husband saying that if you want to be latched on, be sure that your hips are hep and give Paul Whiten plenty of liver. If you lock them and sock them and put them in your pocket, you'll be bounced right out of Jersey. Because mares eat jive and does eat jive and little lambs dash away their cat's veracity. Boot.
Well, that's enough. Good night, folks.
Good
Tarantai, couple surfers, netaholics, and infomaniacs. You stay in Curious Yellow, it's time to chronicle. Neo-postmodernist, it's me, the Bard of Broadcasting. Studying. I'm the master of randomness. Wake up, it's night, everyone. Time for Cthulhu to chronicle. I'm Cthulhu, I'm going to chronicle. Stay with us. Wake up, it's night. Tell him, Phil. You tell him.
冰球到冰球，小村到大市， 咸湿屋仔到咸湿中心， 是Cthulhu Chronicles.
From ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. We don't need more music, thank you very much. It's time to chronicle, the chronicle. Part two, I hope you were all around, and if you weren't, you weren't. You'll get to hear it, something like it tonight on this show. John Matthews and that radio show. This is that radio show that I did last night on the John Matthews show. John Matthews, the man in search of the H in his first name. I don't know why, but John, some people have no H's. John Hall, actor in the days of those people that we played. During the opening collage there, you know, I just been on this Burns and Allen kick, because of Antenna TV showing these old episodes of the TV show late at night, early in the morning, you know, which is early in the morning for me or what have you. I have many, many times told you personal stories, my mother, who is certainly a Gracie Allen in real life. And it just the amazing things that I think back and how entertained I was by her and my father, even though, and he was being a straight man and didn't know it. They had their routines and they didn't know it. I always imagine later on as I'm watching Burns and Allen, what would it have been like? And who would I have been if my mother and father were those people literally doing the comedy, performing, and instead of these real life Burns and Allen, my father actually smoked a cigar too. Who would I have been? These are questions that can never be answered. But certainly, when I watch Burns and Allen, I'm just hurled back, and that's why. And you want to, you know, because book Molotov Memoirs opens, of course, with Portrait of a Child as Stupid, which is a play on the. Is that James Joyce, who is a portrait as an artist of a young man? Portrait of a Child of Stupid, and these stories of my father and my mother that are in that book are just precious. I think that I love them. If I love them, you'll love them. Molotov Memoirs. That was a cool little commercial. But back to the show and to Burns and Allen. That was an old from the a Paul Whiting show. Whiting, I think it was Whiting. Yeah, Paul Whiting was an orchestra leader back in the 30s. Radio. That was radio. And doing Jive Talk. Remember Jive Talk? A real Jive Talk, and not the Jive Talk that the Bee Gees sang about millions of years later, but the cool jive jazzin' stuff that went on back then. Anyway, in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, John Matthews is with us and will be here momentarily, I believe, to talk. Because I don't know if I'm going to be on, if his show is running this or that. I don't know. We got a 3-hour difference. John, of course, is a, I hope he's a fan of Burns and Allen. We don't have a lot in common, but yet we do, because to, and actually we don't. But we had a great spirited conversation last night. Y2K plus 14 on the 5th. It's now the 6th, and we're going to have a spirited conversation tonight. It's not going to be a debate or an argument or anything like that. It's going to be two very one intelligent person. That's him, me. And we're going to be talking about products. We're going to be talking about how some people, again, I know my audience don't get fooled, but don't get fooled. And doing some jazz there, picking it up there. 23 Skidoo, doing the 23 Skidoo. I don't even know jazz. I don't know jive, doing jazz jive. But we're going to be talking about this. We don't do politics on this show often. You know, Tom Savino came out. Hey, speaking of Tom Savino, the 20th. That's the week after next week. So on Thursday the 13th, and then on Thursday the 20th, Tom Savino will be here on the 20th. And I don't know what we're going to talk about. Tom always has something up his sleeve to talk about, but we'll be doing that. What else? Well, you know, to buy the books and everything. We're back here, and I just wanted to share some Burns and Allen jive talk and stuff to you. I'm a big guy, and speaking of Tom, of course, because we were kind of a team. Kind of? No, we were a team. And teams work together in various ways, and that's why George Burns being the straight man and Gracie Allen being the wacky lady. I've never seen, just like I've never heard Harpo Marx talk, I've never seen even a film or a newsreel or anything of Gracie Allen when she wasn't playing the Gracie Allen that everyone knew, who is cunning in her own world, living in her own world. There's John Matthews says that I'm living in a parachute universe is what I was living in. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man who adorns, the name adorns. I adorn the show anyway, don't I? I do too. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. And I'm here, and you can get me, of course, at Frank Cotolo, at Daily Meds now, M-E-D-Z, M-E-D-Z, Daily Meds. You can go over to Twitter and get yourself pearls of wisdom. I don't know if they're pearls of wisdom or... They're wise, and funny, and they make you think. And it's not like, and I'm, you know, God bless Mr. William Paisley and his pocket guru and all the love and sunshine blowing machines. I'm giving you something to hopefully make you think one way or another. A little abstraction, but and sometimes make you laugh. To me, that's That's what it's all about. Me, Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show, the man who was always here, always here on Thursday nights. Isn't that something? I wasn't always here on Thursday nights, but for many, many years here on Thursday nights, when there were no talk shows anywhere, no matter what anybody tells you, I was not found by another person on an internet talk show. But in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, we have philosophical entertainment and relevant irreverence, and we have John Matthews, who I think I have to call right now, because he said, I think he said something like that. It's 6:15 on the West Coast, and it's 9:15, it's later than that now. How come my clock up there has 9:17, and this clock here, that this is the one, this is the atomic clock here on the elevator. And by elevator, I mean computer. This is the one that, let's see if John's there. We'll get John now and start this doggone thing, because we've got stuff to talk about. He's there.
Yeah, good afternoon.
He picked it up. Afternoon still for Mr. John Matthews in, you're not in San Bernardino. Where are you again? You're somewhere near the Orange County line, right?
I'm sorry?
You're somewhere near the Orange County line?
Yeah, I'm right. I'm pretty much right on the border between Orange and L.A. County.
Oh, yeah. I know that area pretty well. When I used to go to Los Alamitos racetrack in Cerritos.
Yeah, I'm probably about 10 minutes away from Los Alamitos.
Oh, do you go to the Catella Deli?
I'm sorry?
The Catella Deli on Catella Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
Still there?
It's not the Santa Anita racetrack, but it's the Los Alamitos, yeah. Yeah, I've been down there quite a few times. I don't go to the racing, but I know where it's at, yeah.
The Catella Deli has the most incredible matzo ball soup.
Oh,
they used to. I don't know if they do anymore. I don't know what they have, but I used to leave early, really early from Hollywood to get, because I'd have to take like, you know, three freeways to get down there. And then it was always, crowded, you know, the driving down there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's changed much, has it? No.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, they've got a Costco down there now and stuff. So, I mean, the traffic down there is always really bad. Mm. It's always filled with something going on. You know?
Well, I used to leave really early to get down there, and then I used to stop and have dinner at the Catella Deli. And that's all a lot of government owned land around there. Isn't there that around, is that like, did they sell it? And it's now other down Catella near the racetrack there.
Well, what had happened was there was a Cottonwood Church had bought about 18 acres down there next to the racetrack about 20 years ago, and they started to build on it, and the city called eminent domain, and they were actually locked into like a 5-year lawsuit over the land. And then what happened was, because they didn't want to lose the property tax of letting a church build there. So what happened was actually somebody on the city council had another 23 acres on the other side of the racetrack and gave that to the church so that they could build the Costco there. So it was kind of a unique situation, but it was locked up in the courts for like 5 or 6 years.
The church built the Costco?
No, the church built their church, but they built it on different land.
Oh, okay.
Because the city wanted that land for eminent domain to build the Costco. And so it got into this big thing about the church had already paid for the land and it had owned it for 10, 11 years outright.
Mm.
And then the city council decided they didn't want to let them build the church when they decided they were going to build. And they didn't want to let them do it because Costco at the same time. So the council just claimed eminent domain and said, well, we're not going to let you build there.
Huh.
So, but like I said, one of the city council members had land on the other side of the racetrack,
mm-hmm.
and he donated it to the church, gave it to the church, and then the church surrendered the land that they wanted to build on.
And they all celebrated at the Catella Deli with matzo ball soup.
Matzo
ball soup for everyone! In case you people don't know it, and in case you aren't listening, John Matthews is, of course, the host, creator, founder, director of that radio show. Are we on that show now? Are you simulcasting this?
Oh, no. No, I'm not. I'm not. I only air on my show Monday through Wednesday.
Oh, through Wednesday. You know, I was thinking you were on every day, and I went every day, every day. Of course, you do. I mean, you have so many things that you could talk about. I do, too. But, you know, every day is a strenuous, pressure-filled.
Yeah, it's thing. Not something that I've been able to do just because of other obligations. You know, I'm like semi-retired right now. If I was fully retired, I probably would go every day. But I got to spend time with family and stuff. You know, you gotta be able to balance life out. You know?
I'm semi-conscious. If I were fully conscious, I'd be doing this more than once a week. John, you could get to John's show Monday through Wednesday at thatradioshow.com?
Well, that's the website, but we stream on mycastlive.com.
Mycastlive.com, okay. And that's what you can do. And you would be on P at Pacific Standard Time.
Right, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Last night, I was, for the first time in a long time, on John's show because we had something to talk about, and I wanted a couple of things we're going to talk about pretty much the same tonight. I don't know if a lot of people went over there, but we said we would do a part one over there and part two over here. John's show, why don't you explain to those? John has been on this show before, friends. You people should remember all this. I know you're keeping notes. You get your composition book and you keep notes. and remember, because I don't annotate this stuff and I rarely keep track of when and where, who, what, where, when, and why. But John's show is a blend of conservative theories, philosophies, politics. John is, and this is coming from me out here, me, Frank Toll, the man whose name adorns the title of this show. John is by far the conservative broadcaster. I'm trying to say this so that it makes grammatical sense too. You're a broadcaster. You're not a conservative broadcaster. You're a broadcaster on conservative issues. And probably the only one that I care to even discuss anything with at any given time, because John and I befriended one another, and we're not like Burns and Allen.
I tell people what we are is we're diametrically opposed spiritually and ideologically, but pretty good friends.
yeah. I guess we're an example in a sense too, and we would hope all of you people would have. Would see that this is a great example, because I don't do politics on this show anyway, although a lot of things become political. You know, this is more pop culture and various forms of mind movement. Right side of the brain. You're on the left side of the brain. Well, isn't that funny that you're on the left side of the brain, but it's all, I never realized that. That's right. Conservatives are more on the left side of the brain. And liberals are the opposite of conservatives or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of surprised to hear you admit that you're a liberal, because you make such a great argument for not really believing in anything.
I do make a great argument for that, and I guess that you can't. Well, you can't say I'm conservatively. I mean, you can't use the word conservative.
No, you know? When people, I tell people you're what I call apolitical. You don't really hold to any specific ideology, and that's what I always found interesting about you. It's like, how does somebody engage in conversations like this when they really don't hold any views? And so you're kind of a paradox to me.
Well, you know, with anyone who isn't, because conservatives are use the word fixed, because there are I mean that in the sense of like of having things, you know, unmovable things, philosophies, and you know what I mean, and you just have way, and anybody who doesn't, I guess, just falls over into this melting pot of liberals. So I guess you have to, I don't know what you could say, because there's not a lot of me's out there, so I don't have a party or a slant, and yet, because I'm not, in other words, if you're not conservative, you're liberal, period. I guess that's it, right?
Well,
is that it?
Well, the way I put it is, if you're not conservative, you're wrong.
You're not right, you're wrong. Okay.
Yeah, I don't care what you want to call yourself. If you're not conservative, you're wrong. I mean, you've described conservatism, I think, very accurately. Mm-hmm. The literal translation of conservative is status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we don't believe that you should fix things that aren't broken. Now, the argument out there today is, are things broken? And I'd have to say yes, but I'm more of a, you know, we have words in this day and age, we have words thrown around that just mean something completely different than what we traditionally have held them to believe. And I'm just one of these people that I'm not really into revolution. Mm-hmm. I'm not in any of that. I'm into reformation. I think mm-hmm. what we need in this country is a reformation. We need to return to the original intent and purpose of our Constitution and Declaration, and our government needs to return to those principles, something that has really, really got out of whack across the board, no matter whether you're Republican, conservative, liberal, libertarian, or whatever. We've seemed to have lost track of what the intent and purpose of our republic was established for. And so I'm more into a reformation mentality. I think we need to go back to basics regroup and start to reestablish those things that are important as far as making us, I think, one of the great, if not the greatest, certainly one of the greatest countries in the world.
Wood stoves. That's what we need. More wood stoves.
Wood stoves.
Wood stoves. No, I want to make sure that everyone knows here, though, because they always hear me saying things, and we talked about this last night, they always hear me saying things about the group that I call the gas bag gang, and that's these guys who were at one time disc jockeys, and then when everything changed and it went to talk radio, they went over to, they were these incredibly knowledgeable political forces, which is like, baloney, because half of them aren't even good broadcasters. And guys have jumped from, disc jockeys and morning zoos. And these guys, as I always mentioned, I'm not crazy about them as broadcasters. They'd be the broadcasters first and political movers second. What I'm trying to say, and what I'm saying, not just trying to, is that I want to separate you from the gas bag gang. Because I don't think you're in that gang.
Well, I really appreciate that. I'm really flattered by that. I would actually agree with you, although I think it's more like, I think a good number of pundits, at least on my side, are not necessarily former broadcasters, like disc jockeys or something, but sports commentators. Mm-hmm. I I've seen it on the left too. Keith Olbermann is a good example on the left, somebody that was a sports guy and tried to get into talk radio.
Yeah.
Certainly Rush Limbaugh is one of those guys that began his career, working for a sports franchise. I believe it was with the Kansas City Royals or something. Did some stints in radio as far as sports broadcasting, and obviously proved to be quite inept at that.
He did. He was a disc jockey too.
Oh, yeah. He might have been. Yeah. And I know Hannity was a disc jockey at one time too. So, I think that fits the pattern. But yeah. I'm one of these people. I never went that route. I went strictly into political. What do you want to call it? Political talk. I decided one day, okay, I'm going to be a pundit. That's what I'm going to do. And went into it that way. So, I guess in that light, I'd have to say, I didn't go in with the intent of being something else. Actually, I went into radio to just be a producer. That was my original thing. I was going to do producing for my church and take, sermons and, disseminate them out on the internet and that kind of stuff. And the station manager where I was training at just kept pushing me to go in. You need to get on the radio. You got a good voice for it. You need to go into it. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. And it was an experiment for me. She said, well, I'll give you some airtime and just try it out. And I didn't want to do religious programming. So, I didn't want to do my own sermons and stuff, even though I have done that. I just like, no, that's not what I want to do. So I thought, well, let me play around with politics. And I just jumped into it, and I caught on to it, and I developed an addiction to it real fast. And that was, I'm almost like a political junkie. So I just went, okay, let's do it. And it's just progressed the way it is now.
But you also do things. You're not just a a talker either, because I know you have a movement going on out there, and people get together and you try to do things with legislators and stuff, right? What is that deal you got going out there?
Well, what I do there is I do a lot of writing. I've blogged for several sites. I've done several articles for Yahoo. I contribute to them on a regular basis, which is unusual that they would take a conservative columnist, but we created what we call the Faith in Government Forum, and the Faith in Government Forum is a little bit different. We're not really out to affect legislators directly. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't get together and lobby legislators and say, let's do this or let's do that, or we want this or we want that. What we do is we engage the Christian community, and we have two objectives. And one is to educate them as to what their responsibilities are as Christians, as well as citizens, in terms of the political process and knowing what's going on in their respective communities. And two, voting biblical values was something that's really lacking in the church. I'm very involved in church and Christianity, but I'm in an activist mode. Some of the people I look at with the least amount of respect are people in a church, because I think they've dropped the ball. They don't do what they were supposed to be doing as Christians, mm-hmm. and especially pastors. Pastors are my pet peeve, and I get in a lot of trouble because of that, because I call them out on it. You know what? You're supposed to be a pastor. You're supposed to be teaching your people biblical values, and what you do is you hide behind your walls and you're afraid to address certain issues because you're afraid your congregation might walk out on you, because probably half your congregation is engaging in the very thing that you're talking about. So I understand completely why the world, those that are not Christians, look at us and call us hypocrites and elitists and everything else, because there's a lot of that that's true. We don't practice what we preach. And so I'm kind of one of these people that just kind of gets up and says, you know what? If you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk. Otherwise, get out of the way and let somebody else do it. So I get in a lot of trouble for that.
That's the spirit, though. I mean, I wouldn't have it in that theater, but that's the kind of spirit I have, because even standing aside from any kind of religious community, and I know people who are in local churches and spin-off churches and organizations. And, it just becomes this imbroglio of politics they just don't do anything that's related to what they say they believe and what they should be doing. And you need people to stand up like you, and say, hey, and I love that. Just get to talk the talk, walk the walk, get out of the way. That spirit is what I think may be something that we share.
Well, yeah, I just think, you know, the problem, Frank, is that a lot of people that are quote unquote in ministry within the Christian community is there are people that look at Christianity as one of two things. They look at it as a way to prosperity, mm-hmm. or they look at it as a career. And it's neither of those things. It's a calling. It's something that you're called to do, and that is to be able to articulate, like I said, biblical values that you say you believe in, mm-hmm. and in line with that, then you have to be able to also walk what you're talking. And not that I am perfect in that regard. I mean, I've sometimes got a real language problem when I'm on the radio, because I call idiots idiots, and actually biblically that's improper, but. And I've been known to, you know, unloose a profanity now and then when somebody really, you know, pushes my button. But, in the overall idea of saying, okay, well, in social issues, if we're going to talk about abortion in regard to murder, which we believe it is, then we can't water that down and say, you know, it's like people say, well, I'm pro-choice or I'm pro-life. And when you tell me you're pro-choice, what you're telling me is you're pro-abortion. But people don't want to use that word, because mm-hmm. abortion signifies what the act actually is. So let's call it something else so that we don't feel so guilty about it. And that's just, and the church does the same thing. Mm-hmm. They put these things out there. We don't want to rub people the wrong way. We don't want people to disrespect us or, you know, not like us. And I'm like, well, again, from a biblical perspective, the Bible tells us that those that are not Christians will hate us because we say things that they don't really want to hear. So you have to accept that as part of the program. That's why I, maybe that's why I am so comfortable in the conservative mold, is because I don't really care if somebody doesn't like what I believe in or who I am, because I'm not accountable to them. So, you know, that's the way it is for me. That's not to say that I should be going out of my way to irritate people, which I do, but, you know, that it's part of the program. You know I'm going to irritate people, and sometimes, I word things, even when I do sermons, when I give messages, I particularly choose specific words to provoke a reaction, so that I can now look at that and say, look at what you just did, or look at what you just said. Let's kind of examine that. Why are you so upset about what I said?
Well, you want to wake
me that you believe it.
You want to wake people up to the message.
Right.
You don't want to.
If you're telling me that you believe what I believe, yeah, and I'm just simply reminding you of what it is you say you believe in, and you get upset with me, we have a problem. One of us is wrong, and it's not me.
Well, so, how do you feel about you know, how do you feel about Pope Frank?
I have, how do I say this delicately? I've been anti-Pope for quite a while. I don't care.
Anti-Pope. I love him. He's got my name. I love him. But do you see that what he's doing? Do you see his style and what have you? A part of him trying to fit into the stream of what's happening with younger generations and how they're.
Well, I think the problem with the Catholic Church, and I was raised Catholic.
Me too. Yeah.
I fell away from the church at a young age, about 15 or so. When my parents got divorced and we were excommunicated, and it taught me something real fast. In the Catholic Church, if you don't adhere to the doctrine, then you're gone. And so what I've seen happen since that time, since at least the last three popes we've had, is that you change the doctrine so that you don't have to kick people out.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's been something that's been real, you know, I'm not into biblical legalism, mm-hmm, which I believe the Catholic Church represents. I'm not a believer that you can earn your way to heaven. I'm just one of these people that believe you change your lifestyle because of what you have professed to be and not what you think you'll eventually obtain. So it's kind of, you know, salvation is a process to me much more than it is just an experience. So I kind of look at that kind of scenario and I say, well, I remember growing up where they quit, Good Friday was, you know, we didn't eat meat on Friday.
Right.
And then people, McDonald's came along and it kind of blew that doctrine out of the water. And, so then it was, well, then you had to, women had to wear veils when they went into church.
Right.
And so women quit going to church because they didn't want to wear veils. So we changed that. And, you know, then it was, well, divorce. If you were divorced, then you were excommunicated from the church. But there were a lot of people getting divorced, so they quit doing that.
Well, you could pay. I mean, remember, Frank Sinatra paid for his divorce. You could actually, there were certain people.
Well, you know, you look at people, and the extreme element of that is people like the Kennedys who will get married for 12 years, but then they get their marriage annulled because they want to be able to take communion. And so they give the church some money, and the money says, we won't call it a marriage. We'll call it an annulment so that you don't violate the doctrine of the church. Then you have people like Pelosi, who on one breath will tell you that she believes in the Bible and everything the Bible teaches, and then will turn around and tell you that she can't, nobody knows in the church when life begins. And the Bible is very plain. Life begins at conception. It's there. It's not hidden. It's not hidden in between the lines. You don't have to interpret it.
Well, you know, we don't have atheist political people and stuff because it's just not politically. I mean, it might happen sooner or later. I mean, because there are homosexuals getting elected and right. So eventually, there's got to be someone here and there who just doesn't look at the political side, because those are votes, right? I mean, people, God-fearing people and loving people, I mean, religious people are votes. It's political, isn't it? They might not even believe any of it.
Well, I'm one of these people. I think you understand this about me, Frank. I'm not a person that separates religion and politics.
Right.
I think they're one and the same. I think they're two sides of the same coin. And my observation has been in my life, is that when you look at types of government that throughout the world, and you can look at the type of religious practices or the faith they profess, and you can see the correlation between the two. You know, we are here in the United States of America, a very prosperous country because of the fact that our fundamentally, politically, ideologically, we believe in the rights of the individual. And that means that person has the right to choose. They have the right, but they also have the issue of accountability and responsibility for those choices. When you go into countries like the Middle East, where Islam is basically a theocracy, and you find oppression and you find, all kinds of bad things that go on, and mistreatment of human beings and disregard for human life, because the oppression is such that, it creates that persona, that kind of mentality. So I don't find a separation. Where I do agree with those on the other side of the aisle is the idea that we use the Bible. I'm not a believer in saying the Bible should be the mandate or the guidelines by which we create laws. I do believe the values that the Bible teach is essential to civil society, but that doesn't necessarily mean what we say. That doesn't mean that we go out and we say, okay, let's make abortion illegal, or let's make homosexuality, marriage between homosexuals, illegal. What it tells me is the church has not done a good job of teaching that those things are morally wrong, and so we have to legislate it, and that's wrong. I don't believe that we have that right to go out and legislate, and the same from the left. I don't think it's right for somebody to come to me and say, well, I'm a homosexual and you have to accept it under penalty of law. I'm like, no, I don't have to accept it. I can accept who you are, and I don't mind who you sleep with. You can sleep with your pet frog for all I care. But when you come to me and say, well, you have to accept what I do, and in doing so, keep your mouth shut, then I have a problem, because now what you're doing is you're violating my individual rights for the purpose of placating any guilt that you have associated with the fact that you're doing something that you know is inherently against natural law.
Well, legislating.
So I look at all that stuff and I go, you know, that's where we've lost track here. We want to make rules on both sides of the aisles about things that neither one of these people, you know, I mean, you got to admit this, Frank. Politicians are the most immoral people in the world.
Yeah, they're one step below pedophiles.
Yeah, and yet they're trying to legislate morality.
Well,
to us.
Morality can't be legislated anyway. That's always been a really dumb thing. Always trying to legislate morality and very other stuff, laws. That's nuts. And as far as the Mideast is concerned, and I don't mean Delaware. As far as the Mideast is concerned, those guys, if they ever sat down and read the Quran, they might different. That's all human nature. That has nothing to do with their book, you know. That's human nature. Power and greed and all the stuff that goes on everywhere. That just goes on there. But don't you, the thing about this Pope though, isn't he, what he's trying to do is he's trying to be like, he's trying to be very Jesus-like, it seems. By just saying, hey, okay, look, I just, you know, whatever it is, I forgive you and you're okay. And, come on in and love. And, you know, he's trying to get down to this basic thing that really has dissipated from the image of Jesus. I have friends who are Jehovah Witnesses and they're always, they come to me just to laugh. They come and they laugh because I keep telling them, how come you changed Jesus' hairstyle in every couple of years. You ever notice that? If you get that awake, those little magazines they give out, right? And it's like you look at it through the years and it's like they just find out who's wearing their hair like what. Suddenly there was one they gave me and I went, we didn't have blow dryers back then. I mean, this is like, and so what they're trying to do, I guess is what the Pope is trying to do, is just get into, get people to listen to them.
What I see, I would agree with you. I think, if I was going to give the best illustration of what I see happening right now, I do think that this Pope is trying to, I think in some ways, do some damage control with all the issues that the church has had as far as the child molestations and stuff like that. I think he's trying to placate the congregations out there. I think he's come to a realization that probably 70% of the people, you know, if you talk to Catholics, most Catholics today, and I do this a lot because when I'm around people, this is what I do. And I'll ask them specific questions about Catholicism, the catechism. And I'll say, well, do you believe this? Do you believe that Mary is the mother of God? And they'll say, well, no. And do you believe that another man has the right or the authority to forgive your sins? And they'll say, no. And so I'm asking, well, then why are you a Catholic? And what I find is that most Catholicism is linked to a culture. The culture teaches it because there's certain aspects of it that fit the culture that it's in. The unfortunate thing here in America is that religion, for the most part, is dissipating at a tremendous rate where it doesn't really fit into our culture that is evolving the way that it is. And that is every man for himself, and you can do whatever you want to do as long as it, quote unquote, doesn't hurt somebody else. I've never known any situation in my life, and therefore I assume with anybody else, that if you do something, the consequences of your actions are going to affect somebody else at some level. You know, a drug addict affects his family, his or her family. A homosexual affects him or her family because they have to deal with the issues also because, you know, they are out there in society and all the other things that go along with that. There's judgment across the board. We're humans. We love to judge other people by their intentions, and we judge ourselves. Or we judge other people by their actions. We judge ourselves by our intentions. And so it all falls into this mold where we sit here and say, well, you know, religion has basically become a joke. And I can't argue with that because there's enough out there that validates that. But that doesn't change. It doesn't change who God is, and I like your analogy. But the analogy I'm pointing out is in the movie Dogma, when what's his name, George Carlin, who's the cardinal, and he unveils the new Jesus, and it's a statue with Jesus with a smile with a thumbs up, you know, like, yay, you're okay kind of thing.
You know,
and that's really what's happened not only outside of the church but in the church, is that Jesus has been changed into something – humanism. He's humanistic now. We've taken him off the throne of God, and we put him down where we feel comfortable with him. And anything outside of that, we'll talk about his love. We'll talk about his compassion. We'll talk about his pity on people and stuff like that. But we won't talk about his righteousness. We won't talk about his judgment, because those are areas where we have to look inward rather than looking at other people. And I think that's one of the biggest arguments I get from the people that don't believe in the God of the Bible, and that is that they'll judge me by what they believe Jesus represents, which is unconditional love. But they don't understand that even though God loves unconditionally, he still has a standard by which he will eventually determine who the good guys are and who the bad guys are.
You know, the stuff we were talking about. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, but.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But so that's the paradox right now, is this massive paradigm shift, and we've deconstructed what religion really means, and we've redefined it, and we've created a, as you were saying, as we started this whole thing last night, we've created another product.
Well, this is why I'm saying. We didn't mean to talk about religion or what have you, but this is exactly what we were talking about in terms of policy and politics, because the Pope is trying to make a brand out of the Catholic Church so that people will see it a certain way. And these people are the audience that he needs. I mean, because this is the atmosphere of today. So they're altering it to do that. And then what we were talking about yesterday was definitely the God's honest truth, and that is that business is business. And when we talked about the news networks, the media, and what have you, that they're all doing whatever they have to do to survive, to make money, making it a product. And by making something a product, you do lose, as you were mentioning, in terms of these people who are saying, like, well, our foundation is the Bible. And it's like, well, you're not doing that because you made this brand of it. And it's the same thing. It loses the measure of the message, whatever the message might be.
Right.
And that's what John and I were talking about yesterday, because I noticed, and I think I'd mentioned it here, and that's where I got the idea, and then I got in touch with John. I noticed that, Fox News, that is, the public has made this the, what is it? It's the, this is the theater, for conservative, thought, and yet, Rupert Murdoch, who is a flaming capitalist, an Australian who's made billions of dollars. He's the same guy who bought MySpace and his company, that one blew that one. But the point is that he's doing everything for money. And somewhere along the line had this brilliant idea to build this theater of conservatism and then get all these people, because it was a void, and he knew that there were people out there. He knew there was an audience out there. At the same time, Rupert Murdoch and News Corp know the audience, the other audience, and they go get the other audience at FX, which is a station they own and which was doing so much making revenue that they now started FXX. And on these, the programs on these stations, I mean, they don't weigh in to what the audience of his conservative news network would. And in fact, you talk about diametrically opposed, the people who are on there, they support some of these shows with money. They help create them. And everything, because it's a business. They don't care about the conservatism. That's a whole nother audience. And so what John and I were talking about, and what I was saying, is that these are just products. They find, you do what you gotta do to get an audience, just the way a radio station, can't play cha-chas anymore, so they go to country music. And they go, well, then that doesn't work. Or they go to, there's a station down here in Pennsylvania that does polkas. I mean, do all this German music because we got a great German community here, and then we have all the Amish people. I don't think they listen to radio, but what have you. But we have this, and that's all they do. Now, why are they doing that? Because they could get the sponsors, because they could get the, and when you commercialize something, and I think you agree with this too, John, when you commercialize something, you immediately rip out some of the guts of whatever the message is of that particular topic.
Yeah, that's true. If I can address the one thing you're saying here, mm-hmm. that I kind of have to disagree with in terms of when we talk about Fox News. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that Fox News is a conservative outlet.
Okay.
I think it's an establishment outlet, and it's always been that way. It's just that what we see today, again, within the capitalistic aspect of it, like what you're talking about. Okay, let's mm-hmm. create a brand mm-hmm. and let's call that brand something. And so Fox News has created this brand, and they call it fair and balanced, which is a conservative term, but not necessarily been applied within the conservative concept of what that means. What they've done is they've taken the label. To me, it's kind of like saying you take something and you put it in a new package and you say it's new and improved, and the only thing that's new and improved is the package. And so what's happened here is they're the establishment, that part of the Republican Party that is, to me, in many ways, just as liberal as Barack Obama or anybody else on the left, in the fact that they're basically overpaid lobbyists, and they all have their little agenda. They all go in dirt poor, and they all come out filthy rich. And so it's kind of like they're doing the same thing. They're using the brand to build their career for the same purpose, and that's for personal gain and capitalistic ventures and all the other stuff that goes on.
So what are we disagreeing on? What's the disagreement on that then?
Well, the disagreement is that I don't believe in the at least in the TV media, in the visual media, mm-hmm. there is a real conservative outlet. I think it is confined to radio, because I don't see anything on Fox to me that indicates that they really adhere to conservative values. It's like you're saying, they created a
yes.
product, but that's not necessarily what the product is. They call it that.
But you're seeing it from an intellectual level. The general public just says, well, they don't look at it that way. They don't look at the product that way. They go like, I'm a conservative, so I'm going to watch Fox. And they're the ones, they don't look at it like
that. You're right, and we just have that validated. You know, mm-hmm. the interviews that Bill O'Reilly did with Obama prior to the Super Bowl validates just what we're saying here. Obama says, well, the reason people believe that Benghazi's a scandal in the IRS is because that's the way you present them. You guys have a unique way of presenting the issues. Mm-hmm. And he just validated what we're saying.
Right.
You know? And it's kind of like, well, the left does the same thing, too. You know, they present their side of it and with their brand and, mm-hmm. and everything else to the same for the same purpose, appealing to their base and trying to, you know, garner whatever it is, whether it be power, money or whatever. That's what they're trying to do. So. What I get off on, or what I kind of find, I think, superfluous about it is that, yeah, the general public will do that. The general public will just jump on board and say, but see, Fox News is branded by the media as conservative when they need it to be conservative. You know, mm-hmm. when they pronounce somebody like John McCain as a conservative maverick whenever he's contrary to Barack Obama. But when he's in agreement with Barack Obama, he's a moderate.
That's a conservative. That's an oxymoron.
Depending on what the agenda is.
That's an oxymoron, isn't it? Conservative maverick? Wouldn't that be an oxymoron?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of, I ran across a gentleman. This is funny, Frank. I ran across a gentleman a couple of weeks ago, a Hispanic guy, and he wants to run against Barbara Boxer in the next election, the next Senate election, when she's up for reelection.
Right.
And I asked him to he wanted to come on my show, and I don't mind bringing liberals on my show as long as I understand they're going to get vetted the same way that I vet a conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I asked him was, well, explain your ideology to me. And he said, well, I'm a conservative progressive. And I went, what? And he said, I'm a conservative progressive. I said, define that. Because that's an oxymoron. Mm-hmm. You couldn't be more diamond. You must have problems at night sleeping if you're constantly sitting around trying to figure out how to portray yourself as a conservative running on a progressive ticket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but it's the idea that today we just call anything we wanted to call it, and we say it is what it is. And if you don't like it, then you're a hater. You know, if you don't agree with it, you're a hater. And, you know, that's what the general public is. I think let me go back just for a second for the biblical side of this thing.
No.
Jesus calls us sheep for a reason. And that's because sheep are the dumbest animals in the world.
That's right.
They'll follow anything mm-hmm. and they'll go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. You know? Right. Okay. Well, let's face it. That is the way, the hierarchy of, media businesses look at the public. Demographics don't, I mean, they break people into individual groups in the weirdest ways. And we're not all just those things. And yet that's how the media has, and that's always been, John, no matter who's been, in power. I mean, that is just the way it works.
That's true. But, you know, we have come to a place where putting people in, you know, labeling people and sticking them in specific demographic blocks is not just for the purpose of identifying, it's for the purpose of dividing. And that to me is the dangerous part of it.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's any different either. I mean, is that any different? These are all forces of human nature. There are tribes everywhere. And back in the old days, there were tribes. And if, you know, remember the beginning of 2001? Remember the monkeys they found the weapon and suddenly they could use the weapon. And they were all monkeys. So what's the difference between that bunch of monkeys and this bunch of monkeys? They didn't have the humans have not really gathered much. Different.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just because of the level of deception that is employed now. Where, you know, certainly politics has always had a certain amount of deception involved in it. But the idea here now, it just seems to be that, literally speaking, we have become such an apathetic society in terms of what's going on within our government. That basically what we do is we just, you know, whatever anybody says, we just buy into it. And the people that are in power that are corrupt and are really the evil ones, know how to manipulate that. You know, I tell people, Barack Obama isn't the problem with this country. It's the fact that the population as a whole, enough people in this country have just kind of looked the other way and don't pay attention to what's going on. And all Barack Obama did was fill the vacuum that was created by that. He's taken advantage of, or the people that run him, the people that created him, have taken advantage of that. And so I put the blame on us.
We always, but we always tend
to, we're not really concerned.
Yeah, but we tend to, people like you and I, because these are our times, and we tend to look at our times, and we're not necessarily wrong, but we don't, you know, if you do some research, and you have too, you can go back and find the writings. You wouldn't even know they were 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years ago, because the things that are being said are the same things, in terms of politics, in terms of polarity and how people are polarized. And, you know, it's the human condition this is the reason why it is this way because it's always been this way with a different intensity and another spin. And this is mankind.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I think Solomon said it best when he said, "There's nothing new under the sun. There's nothing new that hasn't been tried, and there's nothing new that will be tried. We just recycle the same stuff."
and that's Aristotle too. I mean, the Greeks were sitting around thinking this stuff, and they're talking about, and they created, right? The Greeks and the Romans created all this. I read a great book by this guy. Now I can't even remember his name. But he was a senator. He was a big political writer during the Roman Empire. And I learned so much about how that government was built at the same time there were slaves. There was, you know, everything was, and then the assassination of Caesar, which was described by this guy. I mean, it's incredibly, there's nothing as dramatic as this is a horrible carving up of a man. It was horrible. And this stuff, and you know, the fighting for power, the fighting for, the parties, the different parties, you know, and the Senate. I mean, this is all came from this particular civilization. And then people say, well, you know, they became so liberal or whatever, and then they started to, you know, the mankind, that's why Rome fell. I mean, you know, there's a billion reasons. And yet, it's not, much different. And remember all the talk about the military industrial complex back?
I'm sorry.
All the talk about the military industrial complex back in the 60s?
Uh huh.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's like, what? Like, was that any different? What happened to that? I just want to tell everybody, because we've been deeply heated in discussion here. John Matthews is with me, and my name is Frank Isola. Man's name is doing the title of the show. This is Cotolo Chronicles, and we're already going into the second hour here, and we're not going to break for any nonsense and talking and PR stuff. But we're just going to go right, continue here. But here's what I want to ask you, because I think this is germane to what you do and how you see things changing, or what you're working for, your campaign, your policies. Tell us, and all right, everybody who's not in your camp, tell us what would be the best conservative atmosphere. What do you see? When could John Matthews and people like you sit back and go, now we got it? Where does that come from? Where is that energy? Who can you trust that would bring that to the forefront, and how could that last?
Well, that's a very complex question.
Well, yeah.
To me, it would be, my perception of things would be a return to the original intent and design of the Constitution. I would like, if I was going to pick out particulars, we'll start with that. Listen, the particulars that I would like to see that would indicate to me that we are heading back to what we were created to be, a republic. I think Benjamin Franklin was very prophetic when he said, you have a republic if you can keep it, knowing that the forces that be, that would be the battle, is to maintain the foundation and the establishment, the intent and purpose of a republic. And that all centers again on the individual not only in terms of their rights, their natural law, you know, the rights given to us by natural law, but also the willingness to accept responsibility and accountability for our actions on an individual basis, not a collective, and not look to blame somebody else when something doesn't work out right. But if I was going to look at particulars, I think I would like to return to the basic concept of the Constitution, is that we are 51 separate nations in a confederation, and each state has their own rights, and what has been delegated to the federal government has been very explicitly explained, and everything else belongs to the states. So the return to federalism would be a good indicator to me. The avoidance by central government to legislate things that they have no business sticking their hands into would be another indicator to me. Even more, I would like to see a return to the appointment of senators by state legislators rather than by election.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's one of the initial things that changed the way that this country is. And we see it today when we can have Republican, a state can have a majority in the House of Representatives, but have a minority in the Senate. And that just feeds the, you know, I was talking to a guy last night that called into my show, from Texas, and I asked him, I said, I'm kind of perplexed why you have a senator like Ted Cruz, and you also then you have a senator like Wendy Williams that are just on opposite ends of the spectrum. And from a conservative state like Texas, how does that happen? Well, it's because certain demographics, the urban society is bigger in the minority grouping here, and they like the liberal thing, and the rural area is more conservative. And so it just kind of happens that way. And if we went back to the fact that senators are not elected by the public, but they are selected by state legislators, now we've got the states, each state, represented by the people, and they pick people that will continue to represent why they were elected. And I think that's a much better – that would be, to me, a major thing. So the repeal of the amendment that says that we now elect senators rather than appoint them,
mm-hmm.
I think it's a big issue. I think I think the ability to – impeach judges at any level is something that has been ignored and should be used, because we have judges that are overstepping the boundaries of separation of power and are legislating from the bench instead of determining the constitutionality of something as the Constitution states that they determine the constitutionality as they interpret it. And so now that's why we've got certain circuit courts like the Ninth Circuit Court that can overturn anything, including the will of the people. We have it out here in California. We voted for Prop 8. This is, we're going to say the Constitution of California is going to state that marriage is between a man and a woman. We didn't do that because we're homophobic. We did it because the homosexual movement is moving to put legislation in place that says if we disagree with homosexuality, then we're now subject to law. And so we respond to what they are doing. We don't go out and create this stuff. We're responding in like when something is presented to us. It's like telling me that I'm moving to the right when I've never moved. It's everybody else moving to the left. And I'm just still, I've stayed where I'm at. So now I'm the extremist. I wasn't the extremist in the days of Reagan. And I believe the same thing now that I believe then. So.
Let's not bring up names either, because Reagan just falls right into the same. I mean, you know, this is another product. I mean, how they've made Reagan into a product, but we don't want to go into that. We want to go into what you're talking about, which is something that's particularly pure from our forefathers at a time when they didn't have the internet, among other things, and you know, and not only that, but at a time when so many closets were filled with things, and even our forefathers, let's face it. So, you know, we talk, and then they're just, like we were talking last night about artists. But these guys are crazy, but they sure created great things, you know. It's kind of like all those guys, too, because there were some anti-religious guys, but they were involved in keeping God involved in the independence and the Constitution and stuff, right? I mean, there were all sorts of guys in our forefathers. You got to go way back.
Well, I think, you know, I really think the debate as to whether we were founded as a Christian nation or not is, to me, just totally futile. And it's a useless debate.
Right.
I think it's pretty well established that
whether Washington or Jefferson or any combination of them were deists or atheists or anything else, they were wise enough to understand that one of the things that the Bible does is it gives us values by which we can establish moral law within a civil society.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, protect individual rights within the definition of what the Bible states that is, that those things that are endowed to us by our Creator, which is not, that's not to say, well, you say, I have a right to marry anybody I want to. Well, you know, you don't necessarily have a right to do that. You have the freedom to choose, but that doesn't necessarily equate into a right.
Well, I did a whole show on the absurdity of what is called God-given rights. Because it's, you know, people just, you know, use that like, you know, where's that list? Where's, you know, where, you, what does that mean? But those guys back in those days, remember there, you couldn't go out on the street and do the things that you did in private or said in private. And that's what, witches were, the witches, they believed in witches. I mean,
yeah.
All this stuff that went on, was tough. You can see today, because you can do that today.
Frank, if we're honest, we have to admit that there even in those days was a certain amount of hypocrisy amongst our founders.
Yeah, absolutely.
we
know that.
Got Thomas Jefferson, who's bedding down his slaves, and we've got Benjamin Franklin, who was a whoremonger.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, but
they had good sides to them. But look what they did! Look what they did!
But the establishment, I try to compare this when I talk to people about this, is look at it from the political aspect of it too. We had, our founding fathers were not only divided on their concept of who God was, but they were divided on the actual form of government that we should have. We know John Adams was an imperialist. He wanted a king. Washington and Hamilton were nationalists. Jefferson was the closest thing to a Republican that we had. He believed in states over everything.
Mm-hmm.
But what they were able to do, because they all shared this common knowledge of morality as to what it's supposed to be, not necessarily what we're practicing, but what it's supposed to be, and said, okay, well, we're going to put aside our own personal preferences and have the objectivity of looking at this situation and say, what would be the best form of government that we could have that would protect what we're fighting for?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they came up with the Republic. So, and that's what we need to see. We get into this, I'm right and you're wrong mentality too much. It's like, well, I'm a Christian, therefore everything I say is better than somebody who's not. That's not necessarily true.
Mm-hmm.
But to say, if we can agree that murder is wrong, then we don't have all these arguments in the court about people that go out and kill people and then try to justify it because they had a bad day or they're going through postnatal depression or PMS or, you know, that kind of stuff. It's still murder. And so we don't have all these debates and we don't start to dumb down evil and we don't start calling evil good and good evil, and then we don't get in all these other debates, we don't tie the courts up, we don't spend all this money, we don't have all these other issues rising up, and we certainly don't have legislators trying to fix it. So it's a monster that is just taking on a life of its own that I don't even know if we're going to be able to ever reverse it.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so at all, because I think we're on a path. And we always have been on a path, of primordial change, and it's going to move and it's going to go to wherever it may go. But we're not seeing. In other words, the point is how do we go? That's what I'm saying. What is the perfect condition? How do you go back? How do you go back to a place? And who are the judges? Who become the judges of the various points of morality? To be able to go back and to do that, to take the Constitution and say, well, because so many things have changed. First of all, look at how big the country has become. Look at all the different people. It wasn't going on there. These guys had slaves in the first place. They didn't even go all the way because they couldn't. They knew there was all sorts of trouble involved in that. And so there were a lot of regular what? White, Caucasian guys running from England, I mean, you know, and pilgrims and people, Germans, and running over here for religious freedom and whatever because of what was going on over there. Religion was ruining England, for gosh sakes. They were beheading people for blasphemy and putting their heads, you know, on London Bridge. So it's like, so we've come so far in terms of those things, and yet, to be able to say, let's go back. How would you go back and still maintain, modernism?
Well, I think, you know, if we address this from the point you brought up earlier, mm-hmm. when we were talking about the Pope, and I mentioned the fact that one of the things the Pope is trying to do is he's trying to become a populist, basically. He's like, what do the people want? And I'm reminded of the fact that, in the movie The Gladiator, mm-hmm. there's a conversation that takes place between two senators once Commodus comes into power. And we know that, you know, this guy murdered his own father to get into power. And he starts the games. And the public just goes crazy over this stuff. And he knows that if I give the people what they want, then they'll love me. Mm-hmm. That's the objective here. And if they love me, then I can do what I want. And that's really the kind of the mentality that we have. But I remember the conversation between these two senators, and they're like, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And the other senator is going, he knows exactly what he's doing. He said, Rome is the mob, and he's feeding the mob, and mm-hmm. he'll give them death, and they'll praise him for it. So mm-hmm. it's kind of like what I see happening today and has been happening throughout all humanity is this evolution where we start out right, and then what happens is the reason why things are progressing the way they are is because the people realize that if I don't give the mob what they want, they won't love me, and if they don't love me, then I won't be in power. So that's what's happened here. We've got legislators on both sides of the aisle. One is just as guilty as the other, where it's like, well, how can I make it look like I'm somebody I'm not, but yet give people what they want and not be held accountable for doing it? I think John McCain said very well a few weeks ago that he hoped that the House of Representatives would do something with the immigration law so that he wouldn't have to. Mm. So I'm like, okay, so you're in an elected position to do something, but what you're basically saying is, I hope somebody else takes care of it so I don't have to be accountable for it. Mm. And I think that very well depicts what's going on in our world today. That we as people are telling our politicians this is what we want. And the ones that are willing to compromise their own values or principles or don't have any values or principles are willing to step in and say, yeah, I'll be the guy to do that. I'll be the guy to give you what you want. And even though I know it's going to destroy society, at least, no, I'm not going to be alive forever. It'll be a good ride while I'm here.
Yeah, the world's a weird place too because of the different tribes there are in this world and the lack of individuality. Now, libertarianism is, you know, where's that fall in here? Because that wouldn't be in your that wouldn't be in your camp because they say, you're an individual, do whatever you want. And the government shouldn't tell you, you can't, if you want to smoke dope, smoke dope. You want to do this, do that. Just leave me alone. That's almost anarchy in a way, isn't it?
Well, again, if we talk about pure individuality or, you know, the individual as the center of what is supposed to be happening within our government and the Constitution, and the Declaration were established and written for that purpose to remind everybody that what that means is that every person has, of course, those individual rights or, in some cases, choices. When we talk about morality, it has to come down to choices, not necessarily rights. Rights is something that, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, okay, where we have the right to life, we have the right to be free, and we have the right to pursue those things that we believe will make our life worth living. But
that's pretty
now
broad.
You get down to the individuality of it. Right. And now you have to understand that natural law only goes so far because what you do not only affects yourself, it affects other people. So now we talk about responsibility and accountability. The responsibility and the accountability should be directed towards the collective rather than the individual, but it's up to the individual to exercise that. And so when that is relaxed, when it's deconstructed and redefined to mean something else other than what it really is, then you really have no gauge or moral compass as to what accountability or responsibility is, and therefore you don't really pay much attention to it. And now it comes in, now you turn into this place where whatever I want to do, as long as I'm not hurting somebody else, and you say, well, you are hurting somebody else, well, then that's their problem. You know,
it's
I think human nature, you've hit on it several times during tonight, that human nature is fallible and will always make the wrong decision without any way of gauging what the accountability or the responsibility of that decision is. And I think as a society, that's where we're at. And unfortunately, I don't, as I said earlier, I don't know if that trend is going to change.
Well, I don't think it's going to change. I don't think anything is going to change until philosophically we understand that fixing something, I mean, to have something fixed, is not going to work for everybody. It's never going to work. It can't work. History has shown us that. You can't say in any possible way, this is the law here, and you can't do that. And then there's always going to be people who want to come along and do it. I'm watching tonight. I was watching a girl who got away from the chemical attack in Syria. And she was talking about, the wind blew a certain way. Okay. The wind blew a certain way. And she was fortunate enough to not get the full breath with the D of the poison. But yet, and she's talking about how she went into certain places and she saw people who did get the impact and how things were, she was trying to describe the horror, the incredible horror of what was going on, and she lost her boyfriend, her fiance. She was going to be married, and her brother was taken away by the Syrian government and everything. And what I see when I look at somebody like that, and I didn't grow up in that. I'm happy I'm not there. I'm just, you know, it's like terrific. Well, good luck. It's total luck. I'm here and they're there, and that's great. But I look at her and I have this sense. When I'm looking at her, even though she has a completely different lifestyle and beliefs or whatever's going on, I look at her and she's just saying, can we just like get up? She's just saying the most simple things should be available. Can I get up and have breakfast? Can I get married? Can I just do what I need to do and not worry about poison come because you want to be the head of some country and because someone else, can't we just, they're all, in their heart of hearts, the human condition is exactly that. It just wants to do these normal things to survive and try to be catch a little happiness here and there. And the fixed things are what's hurting it. And that's the Syrian situation, which has happened throughout history and mankind, that's the intense fixed, you know, dictators, tyrants. That's intense because that is fixed. I'm the king. You're nothing. You do nothing. And I have your life in my hands. Okay. And the human spirit doesn't want that no matter where they are, no matter what they believe, no matter what there's their deity. They're not their deity. If they believe or don't believe in God or whatever, they just want, just let me have a nice hot meal here. Like, let me just be free. I love this person. Can I be with this person? It's hard enough to interrelate with another person, another couple of people. See, but when these fixed things come in, it always means it's not going to work.
Well, just because it doesn't work doesn't mean that we shouldn't have fixed things. And because there has to be some point of reference.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about anarchy either. I'm just saying that these are such simple things. Obviously, when you're talking about murder, the atheists and look at the forefathers. Whoever they did, you believe in God or don't believe in God. That's not the argument. The argument is, should people go out and murder? No! Okay, we agree. they're pretty simple. That's pretty simple because I don't want to be that guy who gets murdered. And I don't want them people coming in and you're allowed to shoot my family and stuff because then it infringes upon this little world of happiness that we want to live whether you believe in after or before or anything. While you're here, you want to be comfortable. You want to be somewhat secure, feel it at least, you know. So the fixed things should be these giant things. It shouldn't be people using them so that other people can be miserable.
Well, what we've done as a society and as a race, actually, is that we've taken just what you said, these minor things. You know, I want some comfort in my life. I want some happiness or whatever, you know, however that's defined. But we want it without having to deal with the bigger issues, which you can't have. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You've got to deal with the bigger picture. And so what we've done is we're not interested in what the big picture projects. I just want what I want now. I'm not really concerned about whether a movie is beneficial to me or anything else, as long as it's entertaining. You know, it doesn't matter what it's depicting or what it means. It's just as long as I'm entertained. The small thing is I'm entertained. It makes me feel good. It makes me laugh. It makes me cry, whatever. But whatever is the actual content of the movie and what it implies in the big picture, we're not really interested in that. I think that's why we have such a, what I call a sitcom mentality in this nation, where we have the plot, the crisis, and the solution in 30 minutes. Because if we have to deal with it any longer than that, we want to commit suicide.
Well, it's the same thing, though. I mean, drama is drama. It works in every possible way with the same set of rules. That's drama. That's what we do. If you give me 15 minutes, you do the same thing that you do in 4 hours. The idea, I think the thing that you really hit upon here is that, yeah, we want to be entertained. And we don't really, and a lot of people don't care. And other people look into it and work with it and see it as some, you know, artistically, or look at it in academically. And other people just want to look at it and say, hey, that's great. Look, a couple of buildings blown up. That's great. I'm looking forward to the new Godzilla. They're doing it again. They made another Godzilla. You know, I don't mind watching that. That's fine. What does that have to do with anything? You know?
And I would agree that both mindsets are completely acceptable. Mm-hmm. Where we get into the problem is when one or the other decides that the other person is interrupting their personal space by not understanding it from their perspective. So if we say, you know, the idea of, you know, I use homosexual marriage a lot because that's probably the most common or thing in the forefront today that really exemplifies what I mean when I talk about the difference between right and choice. Somebody says, well, you should have the right to marry who you love, okay? But it's still a choice. I mean, you have the right to love whoever you want to love, but when you make a decision to violate natural law, now you're making a choice.
Yeah, but that's a judgment. Here's the deal, though.
It isn't a judgment when you live by standards. Like I said, you have absolutes.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't have to do it. My point is that marriage itself is forget about who's marrying who. The point is it's a legal thing. Let's get married. Therefore, it connects itself to taxes, to this, to various possessions. And so marriage, regardless of who gets married, the same sexes, different sexes, is this agreement. It's this business deal.
Yeah, but see, Frank, that's not how it's being depicted in these days. In these days, it's the idea that
they want the same rights. They say, well, we want insurance too.
Rights. No, they have the same rights for decades.
No, because it goes into the other stuff. It goes into insurance and your marriage. You know, it goes into the stuff that marriage goes into, which is a business deal,
What the movement wants is they want an across the board acceptance by society that what they have chosen to do is acceptable.
You don't have to do that. They have to make it legal or illegal based on marriage. I mean, that's just, they're making a big deal out of nothing here. Everybody's making a big deal out of nothing until it becomes a moral imperative. Then it's all over. Then everybody's crossing swords. That's fixed. That's where the battle begins.
And I don't adhere to that. I'm very much in the line of the fact that there are, again, to me, rights are established on natural law. Choices are anything outside of that. And so if yeah, I
but
sit
you,
there and
but
say,
you
well,
agree not, you
I have the right to the pursuit of happiness.
But John, you have a natural law. You're saying that you have a natural law. But not everybody has your natural law.
Well, I'm saying natural law, by my definition, by the conservative definition, is the law as it was established by God. And then
well,
God
bingo.
Said,
well, that's it. Well, then now you're in trouble. Don't you see? There's conflict.
No, I'm not in trouble.
No, not you. I mean, we're in trouble
in
trying to legislate. We're legislating.
Point, right?
But legislating.
I'm not in conflict with that.
No, but legislating it.
The people that don't want to accept it are in conflict with it. And the only way that they can get out of that conflict is to either beat me down to the point where I quit saying what I'm saying or to penalize me for saying it.
No, I'm legalizing it, though. But that becomes a whole different thing. Legalizing it means, if you're legalizing it, it means that that we're working with it the same way you work with a regular marriage.
From the biblical perspective, and that's where I'm drawing this concept of natural law, you take the conversation, if you believe in the Bible, and I don't know if you do or don't, but if you believe in the Bible, there is a conversation that takes place right along this line. The religious leaders come up to Jesus and they say, is divorce legal? And Jesus says divorce was never the intention of marriage. But because of the hardness of your heart, God has allowed it. Okay? He doesn't say it's a good thing. He's saying God let you choose to do what you wanted to do. But you have violated his intent for marriage.
And there are people, but you know and you believe and you understand that there are people who say, what are you talking about? That's a bunch of nonsense.
But I don't care what they think, Frank.
Well, I know that, but if you want to legislate it, then we're talking about legislating morality.
No, but
you see, or stop
you
it from
my
being.
Point.
I do.
I
miss it
earlier.
Entirely. I miss it
we
entirely.
Don't, we don't want to legislate it. We are countering legislation that's already out there by the other side that says they want to legislate.
Yeah, because people are saying. Look. People are saying you do it with man and woman, and that's just a contract. And because it's so easily broken, because anybody can get divorced, it's just a business contract. It doesn't have anything to do with if we love, what we love, why we marry, what we own. Once it's in a contract,
it's
a contract.
Disagree.
I know you disagree because you're basing it on that, and I'm saying, well, there's other people who don't base it on that.
All right, that's what I'm saying. Just because somebody else thinks it's something else doesn't mean it's right.
Well, I know that, but the idea of right in itself, philosophically, we were just saying, is like, here's what's right, don't kill. Ta-da! What? Big O. Now, how do we take it down to the level of two people who want to live together or whatever they do, and yet they have to have, in order to have insurance, and they have to have this, and all the junk, all the bureaucracy we gotta start nitpicking. Because if you allow it for this one, allow it for that one. Remember when they didn't want a black marrying a white? Oh my goodness! That was like, what? They even made the biggest stink in the world over that! But it was just a contract. I want to marry I'm going to marry this person. I want to marry this person. Oh, you're just marrying that person because they stay in the country because it's illegal to do that. So you see what I'm saying?
See, and that's the difference between you and I is that I don't view marriage as a contract. Mm-hmm. I view it as an institution that is established by God for the purpose of reflecting his nature. You know, man at one time, from the biblical perspective, man at one time was a man. And God said it's not good that he'd be alone, and so I'm going to make a helpmate. He took part of man and created woman, but the two of them together establishes the man. So if you have two of the same sex, then naturally speaking, you're out of balance.
You're out of balance. That's what we're saying. But the saying is that looking at it from everyone... everyone is not going to believe what you or I believe.
I'm not asking them to believe it.
Okay.
What I'm asking them to do is quit trying to put laws into effect that penalize me for disagreeing with it.
Well, let's take the other laws away.
I don't. Then. You can call it whatever you want, Frank. If you're talking about a contract, that most states have had contracts in law. There's civil unions.
Mm-hmm.
Out here in California, we've had civil unions that present every right of a married couple. The only thing is, we don't call it marriage because it has been defined from from a moral standpoint of between a man and a woman.
But that's so that's legislating morality.
And so the legislation that's being put out there is we want to redefine that institution. They're not concerned with the legalities of it and the contract. They want the acceptance that a heterosexual couple have
right.
because it makes them feel better about what they're doing.
Yeah, because they're human beings and they want to be part of the human. They want to be part of the human race. They are part of the human race.
You can't force other people. You keep telling me like I'm trying to force my views on other people. That's the exact opposite of what's happening. They're trying to force their views on me.
Yep, well, yeah, but you've had yours all these years and centuries because everybody has agreed with the biblical stuff. But
well,
when
there's
that,
no fault in sticking to that type of tradition.
I'm not saying it's a fault. I'm
been,
just saying it,
been,
it's changing.
Those have been the essential things that have kept society together.
Those have been the things that have kept society together?
Those are the foundational
morals. Yeah, morals.
Which moral law is established and civil societies are maintained. And when you start changing that, then you're throwing out any type of what you're doing is you're basically what we're doing now is we're legislating lawlessness. We're saying anything you want to do, if we can make a law to make it legal, it's okay. Just because you make it a law doesn't mean it's okay.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I don't disagree with that. But making it a law because someone believes in one particular thing is weird. That's just weird.
That's exactly what the left is doing, Frank.
Yeah, but
they're trying to make laws because they believe in one particular thing, and they're saying we don't like.
But
there's never been a law on the books in any country outside of maybe someplace like. Islam-based stuff where their government is theocracy, where we sit there and say, when in the course of human events have we ever said from the beginning of the foundation of this country that why did the founding fathers not put in the Constitution the amendment that says marriage is between a man and a woman? It was because it was an accepted fact based on principle and values. It was already established. It didn't need to be written in law because everybody already knew what it was. And so now what we're doing is we're saying, well, we don't like that. So let's redefine it and let's put something on the books that says we can now call it what we want to call it. Well, now you're tearing at the very fiber of the tradition and the heritage of the country on which it was established.
You know, there's a beautiful book out there. I read it a couple of years ago by some African guy. I forget his name because it's hard to pronounce. But it's called Things Fall Apart. And it deals with the society of a particular tribe in Africa many, mm-hmm. many years ago before the missionaries came in. All right? And there's some, you know, brutal stuff that goes on that goes on in tribes, their traditions, their morality. It has nothing to do with the morality of any, just their morality. And it's just this bunch of people. And over the hill, down, you know, a couple of miles in the stream or what have you, is another tribe. And they have another idea of what's going on. And this, of course, recreated later on in things like Gulliver's Travels, where there's, you know, the big people, the small people, the people who are the same, who are fighting one another, all this stuff. But each person, each tribe and each person has grown up in this society. They know nothing else. And they believe what they believe, and that's it. And then the other guy can't, you're going to come over here, you can't do that, because you're going to live by ours, or else we'll live by yours, or we'll have our own tribe. And the idea that this, in essence, it couldn't last, that there were all these people thinking all these different things and doing all this stuff. And then, because then, you know, the missionaries came in and just blew it all to pieces. Because they thought, well, you know what's wrong? These guys are all just, they're uncivilized. They're not, because based on our belief, because we have all of this particular knowledge and stuff, they don't know, they're just stupid. So we'll bring this, into their lives and make their lives better. And what it did was completely obliterate the whole tribal system of a continent. And all that says is that, wow, you know, it's like, this is, you brought in what, it was all fine until you came along, you know, and it's because you're, That's what you're doing. You're just saying, no, no, you're going to do like us. And then, of course, right? Because that's one of the crusades. You know? Oh, yeah, you won't believe in Jesus? Oh, we got bigger swords than you. Here we go. It's like, this is madness from the beginning. Whatever they meant to say in that particular book that has continued to absorb people has been, you know, is lost and gone. And nobody wants to stand up. We talk about standing up and saying things. Nobody wants to stand up and say, hey, look, we're going to have to work this all out with the values that perhaps they wanted to put into this. But we can't live by these. No one's going to want to live by these fixed laws. Look, I mean, you know, because Islam's still mad at us. Islam's still mad at us. You know who? You know, did you see Malcolm X? Did you see the movie Malcolm X? Because that's a, talk about political and corruption and people eating their own people. Oh my God. He was a guy like you. Malcolm X was like you. He's like, hey, I just want to go by what we said we believe in and what we're doing here. And they went like, yeah, well, you know, sit down, you're rocking a boat. sit down, you're rocking the boat, for God's sake. And they killed him.
Well, in a perfect world, you know, if everybody was able to stay in their own village and do their own thing, we wouldn't have wars. So, I mean, that, you're talking about the very issues that cause wars, is that, you know, everybody's got, we start out with our own little boundaries and our own laws and our own traditions, and then we feel somebody else is on the verge of violating them.
Sure, and it's not always God, because look at, I mean, it doesn't even have to do with religion. It has to do with people who, you know, kings and people who think they are. Deities of sorts, and they are the God. You're going to look at me as God. So this is like the moral and immoral configuration of all this is so maddening. And the smaller the world becomes, as has happened with the you know, with this digital revolution, how everybody is just you know, available to everyone else. How I can get on my instant messenger, talk to my friend in China. For gosh sakes, what is that all about? And, you know, the fact that it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller is just going to intensify a lot of these conflicts. So, you know, it's probably
going to... Well, I do agree. Yeah? I do agree as you know, the very fact that you and I are in a medium that allows us to not only... one of the advantages we have, I think, over, you know, mainstream media and the traditional way of doing things, whether it be terrestrial radio or TV or whatever, is that we live in a world of real time.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit here as we're talking right now. There are people listening and interacting with each other. You know, on my show, I got people in my chat room. I had two chat rooms open, and they're interacting with each other real time based on what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a unique situation where most people get up and they turn on their TV and they get their 30-second sound blurbs that tell them what the truth is, and they don't bother to care enough to find out if it's valid or not. So you have everybody out there just doing nothing but reciting talking points.
Because we don't have products. You and I are not I'm not a product. You're not a product. We're people. We're two people who have... Our own intellectual movement. You know, it's like I'm not connected to anything. I'm gonna, you know, you're talking and you do your thing, and we don't have to answer to sponsors. People aren't over our shoulders saying, "Hey, you better watch it because we have to sell more knives or whatever they're hay or whatever it is they're selling or drugs or you know."
Yeah, well, We have the advantage. I mean, I have advertisers, so I have, you know, I have an obligation that I do. But I'm not somebody who's going to put somebody on my show to advertise that I don't agree with what it is they're doing. Because now I'm in a position of trying to satisfy somebody that I really don't want to satisfy. But the idea that because people like you and I don't just take everything at face value, because we take the time to examine and debate and intellectualize and philosophize and even spiritualize things, we have a well-rounded well-rounded subjectivity that allows us to engage somebody who believes the opposite and not feel the need to go out and crucify them.
And
that's something that if we could get that, I've believed now for a number of years that internet radio is the salvation of this country. If we can get people interactive and people being able to, from all views and all sides, to be able to sit in a confined area for a moment of time and actually listen to what everybody says, then we can begin to find the common ground that will reestablish, you know, the commonality as Americans and be able to head back towards that place. I don't know that's going to happen because we live in a society that, you know, the bling is everything.
Because we're anomalies. You see, we're anomalies. And, you know, when you have people like, you're always going to have people. You know, when this started, when this internet radio thing started, and I was here when it started, people came on who had never had any, like you didn't have any broadcasting either, but that's not the point. The point is that I'm trying to make here is other people came on to play radio because they were never able to do what was done in mainstream, in brick and mortar radio, and, you know, they weren't able to do it. So they just came on for that. They didn't have, and they were happy, and then they weren't, you know, there was no FCC, didn't have anything to do with it. I've been happy too, but I don't abuse that anyway. I just do my own style. Just because I can say bad words doesn't mean it's my style. So I don't do it a lot.
Right.
You know, but yet there were guys, and I've done this routine on the show before. There were guys that came on and, you know, they wanted to play headbanger music and they didn't know anything about anything. They just wanted to sit there and scream out, you know, vile language and do whatever as if it was like, And it was like they didn't even understand how to entertain somebody because it's like, okay, once you've killed the shot, you know, if that's all you're going to do, it's all over in a couple of seconds, you know. There's no dynamics.
And that's true. You and I both remember this, when FM radio first came into being and how, you know, the AM people were like, oh, you know, FM is kind of like, you know, it's not going to last.
Yeah.
It's not going to survive.
I was saying that last night, remember? Yeah, we were talking about that.
Huh?
We were talking about that last night, remember?
And so it's kind of like, well, that's what, you know, the way that actually I guess this conversation kind of started was the fact that every aspect of the media that has come into being has been labeled by those who, you know, haven't figured out how to use it or utilize it as something that's useless. And I remember the early days of FM radio, you know, you were a communist if you listened to FM radio.
Right, yeah.
And now you're a communist if you listen to AM radio.
And they said you were, they used to say, you know, you were a communist because you were, and they used to say this, because you listen to that classical music, were you intellectual?
Intellectuals! You're a right-wing extremist if you do an internet streaming show, so.
Yeah, it's like, what are they, you know, what are they talking about? And yet, like we talked about in terms of product, AM radio went to that particular format because it had the audience. And that's where all of this stuff is going to do. You have the greatest play in the world. You know, I love when people come out, when people go, I saw that movie. That movie was great. That movie was terrific. I know there's a bunch of movies and there's things that I love, books, movies, and they're complete flops because they did not get the majority and they did not make the money, you know, that they, you know, and people want to argue. They want to go, you kidding me? That was great. That's better than this. And, you know, okay, well, that's your opinion. But the point is that the product, it's as a product, it failed.
Right.
Let me ask you this, Frank.
Ask you a question here, just in line with what we're talking about here, because we do come from two different schools of thought, I guess, conclusions about things. I think we're both kind of analytical people. We just come up with different answers. But let me ask you this. Right off the top of your head right now, give me your top three movies, your top three favorite movies.
Defending Your Life, that's a more recent one.
Uh-huh.
Albert Brooks, I think that's a brilliant.
Right, yeah, good movie.
Brilliant, just brilliant. It takes everything and puts it into a certain, I got to find three more. Two more?
Yeah.
Okay, The Mark of Zorro with the Mark of Zorro with Tyrone Power.
Okay.
Okay. And a Night at the Opera, the Marx Brothers.
The Marx Brothers. Okay. My three favorite movies. Number one is Network.
And yeah,
a lot
Network.
Of people don't even know what that movie
is. All of Chayefsky's works I love. Marty was great too. You just asked me for three. I mean,
to me, that just so well fits.
Network is, yes.
I just see it's one of the most prophetic movies ever made in my mind.
And you know what's great about Chayefsky? We'll get your other ones here in a second. But the idea about is Chayefsky hated what they did to his pieces, how they made the movie. You know, he wrote a screenplay, he wrote a book, and then they made a movie into it, and he didn't have anything to do with it. He hated that system. That's where he got Network. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I would say my second favorite movie is The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, you know, I never, yeah, okay. I don't know that movie so well at all.
Well, I just kind of related to it because, you know, you had every class of student in the school all put together in a room for one day, and they had to interact with each other. And
you grew up in California?
You had the criminal, you had the prom queen, you had the outcast, and you had the nerd. And I always related to that because I was the nerd, and I just kind of relate to that kind of stuff. It's just, to me, it's just a very, very good movie, written very well in terms of peer pressure in school and how these kids begin to understand that they're being different is not bad,
right?
You know, that kind of thing. My third favorite movie is The Christmas Carol, 1938, Reginald Owen.
The great Christmas Carol controversy, right?
Yeah.
I remember growing up with that, and people would say, like, no, don't watch the MGM one. Who was the other guy? There was another one made by MGM. There was an MGM one. That's not Reginald.
Oh, there's been several of them.
The English one is,
versions of it. Yeah. I think a lot of people I know like the George C. Scott version.
No, I mean, no. You're going back to when you're talking about their early movies.
To me, Reginald Owen just did that movie just bang up. And then, of course, I can't remember her name. Lockhart.
June Lockhart.
Yeah, half the Lockhart family was in that movie. So.
Yeah. You know, you bring up something interesting too, and I've told my audience this a million times because it always comes up here and there. And when they talk about Charles Dickens, who came up with some great, great pieces, certainly Great Expectations is, you know, all these great pieces. But here's the deal with Charles Dickens. I said, why is Charles Dickens' books, why are they so long? And people were like, because he had a story to tell, and the English writers were verbose, and it had nothing to do with that. It had the fact to do that Charles Dickens was making a living, and he wrote those, and they were first published in newspapers, and he got paid by the word.
Oh, wow. That would explain it.
Yeah. And it's like, so here you think like, oh, wow, look at this. This is a classic now.
I do have an honorable mention. I have to say this. And my honorable mention is Dead Poets Society.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I just I like movies like that.
Now, those are movies that we wouldn't think to say, we wouldn't think guys like, I don't even want to mention those guys' names, but those decisions are what separates you right there. A great deal of what separates you from the gas bag gang.
Yeah, I guess so. I when I run into somebody like you, Frank, that is kind of, you know, I look at you as kind of a philosopher, you know, and I think to a great degree,
I'm flattered.
People like myself, we're like that. We're analytical people. We look at things and we analyze it, and therefore we form opinions and certainly it's subjective. I mean, when everything you can't be a human being and not be subjective.
Right.
But the idea of being able to at least be able to understand why somebody thinks the way they do and not have to agree, but just understand that to me is so. That, to me, is the missing element in our society.
I agree.
We've not come to that place where we can just accept who we are, the way we are, and not have to try to force each other into that paradigm, you know?
I totally agree with that. And that's why I think we've come to the conclusion we've come to here is that if everyone was like you and I...
Hey, the world would be a perfect place.
Oh God! Hey, it's me, Frank Catolo. We're running out of time here. I mean, John and I could talk. We're gonna be on. John, I'll be if you want. If you don't want me on your show anymore, I won't go.
No, we got to do this again, Frank.
Yeah, we got to do it again.
People have to know.
Yes.
That there are intelligent liberals out there.
Right. And people also have to know that there are people who have your particular beliefs and policies, and they're not the Dez.
And we're not right-wing extremists.
Yeah, 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 I know. It's like, that's the deal. And I hope that some people will go be, will turn off, Fox or anyone else or that big product that that Glenn Beck has now. He went to the internet. He's got this. He's got that. He's got that. You know, and people have to pay for it to get there. I hope they go to your show and buy your products.
Yeah, they can go to thatradioshow.net. Every show I've ever done is there.
I see
can
that.
Listen to anything they want.
There you go, and you can check me. And I think that the people who have followed me all these years, and my golly, I don't even want to count them. That if they know me, and they know that if you're my friend, and we can do this, then they can come and listen to you. So I hope we've benefited in many ways in the little way that we can. Change humanity. I think we're doing it some one way or another. Not that I get on this mic to do it. I don't. That's not my purpose.
Well, if we can affect our respective spheres of influence, then we can do something.
Yeah,
starts out small.
If it just happens, it's fine with me because I don't want to do any extra work and I want to sleep till noon. John Matthews is on that radio show, and you can get him be his friend on Facebook. And go follow him on Twitter and do the whole works there. John, thanks again a bunch for being here with us, okay? And take care. We'll be...
All right, thanks for having me.
We'll have the antenna up and listening.
Okay.
Good night, man.
Bye.
John Matthews, you didn't expect that, did you, people? Did you? My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name joins the title of the show. A show which has... I got two different times going. I guess I should listen. Listen. See, that's New York. That I should watch the atomic clock here, 10:55, and then up there it's 10:57. You know what it is? I think it's the battery. Why would a battery make a clock go faster? You always hear about clocks losing time. How do clocks gain time? That clock is gaining time, and I'm pointing, and you don't even know what clock I'm talking about. That clock right over there. Listen, Frank Cotolo, the name is, go get me on Facebook or whatever. And there's tons of stuff going on everywhere. It's just going on constantly because this is the life we lead. This is what happens. And this is what we do next week. I don't know. It's the 13th and it's a Thursday and I don't know what's going on, but we know that the week after that, Tom Savino will be here and then we're really open. We're going to be looking for more. Some of the regulars will be back. I know Dr. Woldar will be back because there's always going to be something out there in that universe. Like, we haven't finished. You want to talk about things that are not fixed? How about the universe and the galaxy? How about playing ping pong on a moving train? All this stuff and more when Dr. Woldar and even Skylar Hall comes on to the show. Tom Savino, of course, my old partner, who's technically my partner, period. That's it. And I want to remind everybody that the Frank Cotolo story, which I don't want to call it, it's a wonderful documentary called Tenacity and Gratitude by Jeremy Long, is available. Jeremy Long on Facebook, winstonsimmonsproductions@gmail.com. Find out about it. This is a wonderful piece. It's a lot of fun, and it's long, but you don't have to watch it for, you don't have to sit down and watch the whole thing. You could go to, he's got little, you know, you can go to little places, scenes, you can see scenes or what have you, and some wonderful people are involved in it. I don't even want to say I'm one of them. I'm just a kid from Brooklyn who sat out on the fire escape because his mother made meatloaf for me, and his mother was Gracie Allen. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you are. We're going to be back, and we're going to be around. Get to me, Yahoo, fcatolo@yahoo.com. Call me at Skype. You know, all the usual places, the places that we introduced you to from the beginning, because we've been here from the beginning. You believe that? Well, you better believe it. And I'll see you all then. We'll talk. You know, we'll get around. And as, let's see what the parrot say. Here you go. As the super smart parrot said on his deathbed, Alex is his name. He said, "You'll be good. See you tomorrow. I love you. And I have nothing more to say." We'll be right back.
球到冰球，小村到大市，啊，咸湿屋仔到咸湿中心，系 Cthulhu Chronicles。